Welcome, friends, to the Friends That Carry On podcast, where we dive deeper in our trips, unpack tips, and everything in between. The one who holds the torch key is your host. Get ready for your ears to go on a trip with your favorite group of friends.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Friends That Carry On podcast. I'm your tchotchke holder this week, Tony, and with us we have Mr.
Brian Romine.
All right.
Eric Fargo.
Jim Scott.
And then from lovely California, we have Mr. Jim Reed. You out there?
Greetings from the West Coast.
Yeah. All right. So this week we're gonna tag on to our last episode for Jim Scott and I's first foray into Southeast Asia. So we hit Bangkok, Thailand last week. So we jumped on a wonderful little jet airplane.
Yep. Air Asia.
Little jet airplane. Air Asia. To Siem Reap, Cambodia. And Cambodia, or Siem Reap, is infamous for Angkor Wat. I'm not sure what else.
The killing fields. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, obviously from an American standpoint, it was part of the Vietnam War and stuff. But as far as things to see and things to do, I think the temples were pretty much high on
our main attraction.
Our main attraction.
I kind of let's explain to people, because I never even knew these places existed until Terry went. I'm like, I've never heard of Siem Reap. I don't know what Angkor Wat is. Sorry, I'm not that educated. I didn't know what it was. And it opened my eyes when you all went. And I didn't know that they're – so what's cool is they're discovering these the same – they're built the same time a lot of the Roman ruins are built, correct? Time frame as far as history goes?
These are 10th, 11th century.
Okay.
Between 10th and 12th centuries.
Okay.
This was built. So, you know, from year 1100.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think somewhere to the 14th century. Jim, do you know all
Yeah, I think they ended in the 15th century. So, but mostly in the 11th, 12th, and 13th century was the highlight.
Yeah. Well, I think the oldest one was Bantishray, which we'll talk about. I think that was 10th century.
Okay.
Yeah, but
I never knew they existed.
Well, you know, it's funny, and Jim Scott and I were teasing on the second day of our temple visits. We bought the book because, you know, there's this book, a couple of the guys, I think, who've done a lot of individual books got together and wrote a book that's now kind of this on the whole Angkor Wat and the surrounding temples, that whole Khmer
route,
you know, whole thing, right? The whole temple grounds. We were like, we really should have probably read this. Second day, probably learned.
Yeah.
We didn't, you know, but I have looked at it since. But I think one of the most fascinating things about Angkor Wat is the sheer size.
Oh, right.
To this day, it's still the largest religious temple grounds in the entire world,
mm-hmm.
which is just absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. And I would say this, I mean, having gone there, that's one of those places that words or pictures cannot do it justice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, until you just go through those grounds and realize it's one of those things you can't even begin to touch it as far as visiting the whole grounds in a couple of days. You're going to hit the highlights and that's about it.
Right.
It's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of acres.
Right.
It's just huge.
It's also incredibly hot there. I mean, you know, it's usually over 90 degrees and the sun just radiates off the stones. So even if you want to see it all, you know, it's going to take you, you know, more than the 3 days most people stay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, for us, which I think, Jim, you guys have traveled all at the same time, which is in this, you know, December, January timeframe, which for traveling there is the best time. It's one of the best. It's the coolest time of year, which is still in the 90s for Fahrenheit temperatures.
Still humid.
But it's not the rainy season. You got good weather. It's still hot. Like Jim was saying, your temple touring time, you want to get started in the morning and go as long as you can, which typically is 1-2 o'clock maybe, and then kind of wrap it up.
Yeah, Jim, how many times have you been now?
Let's see. I think this was my third time.
Your third time to Siem Reap, Cambodia, and your weather was the same every time. Never really had a, right?
I think the very first time it was a good 5 to 7 degrees warmer. You know, you can hit it when it's much worse than what we had this time. But all three times, it was in the 90s or above.
Right, I can remember when I went 2 years ago. It wasn't really oppressive in any way.
No,
it was just typical really hot southern, like we're used to Georgia heat type of deal.
But it wasn't humid.
It was hot.
I was thinking more like southwestern far as heat for me. Yeah, I thought it wasn't humid. I didn't think.
It wasn't too bad, no.
But so before we get into more of the temples, let's talk about the – so we flew, mm-hmm. and then it was hilarious. So I got to say this. So we talked about last week – Jim, which you missed out. I'm sorry. So I bought those bottles of Mekong, you know, from right. China, which made it all the way through Cambodia, all the way through Vietnam, and back to the States. And we cracked into it last week to test it out. And
by the way, the surprising part about it making back wasn't customs. It was the fact that they didn't drink it.
But this is what's funny. So we were teasing that the airport in Siem Reap kind of reminds me of a Howard Johnson hotel.
Yeah. I've never heard him put that. That's so right.
It is the old scale. Building, the yeah. small scale. It kind of had that little point like a Howard Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and an orange roof.
Yeah, an orange roof.
Big orange right. roof, dark yeah. brown bottle.
We flew into a hojo.
Are they still around?
I don't even know.
I don't know.
All right, so if our listeners don't know what those are, you can Google it and probably find some old pictures. But
hotel chain.
So, you know, as with most of Southeast Asia, you know, you either have some type of visa or kind of an in and out kind of card, and you fill that in. And I didn't have our hotel location because, again, Cambodia really didn't have a street. So I realized once we got inside, I'm like, I'm just putting the hotel down and we'll just see what customs says. But what happened was, I have my little bag of my liquor, you know, because I got it through, what do you call it when you're in the airport?
Customs.
Duty free shop. So I set it up on the counter and I'm finishing filling out my card. I think Jim Scott and I were the first ones off and Jim and Reed and Terry were a little further back, so they were behind us. So we already got up through our line and walked through and I'm over there at the luggage carousel, which literally is right behind the customs. I mean, it's right there. And all of a sudden I was like, where's my liquor? And I'm like, did I leave it on the plane? I said, oh my God, I left it on the table. And I walked back to the customs table and Jim and Terry are just getting ready to go through. And I was like, can you guys go over there and get that for me while we're talking? And the guy at customs turned around, looked at me and goes, go ahead. And I kind of looked at him like, what? You're going to let me just walk back through customs and go over and grab my liquor and then walk right back? And I literally did. I walked back, crossed through the lines, grabbed my bag of liquor, came back through and wave to him and just went right back.
Well, there you have it.
Wow.
There it is.
I was like, there is. That's got to be the only place in the entire world that would let you leave.
That would happen, right?
You know what was interesting about customs there is when Terry and I came through, like you said, just a couple minutes after you, we walked in, looked around, tried to figure out where to go because we already had our visas in advance. And one of the security guards came up to us and said, hey, if you give us $5 each, we'll take you right here and you don't have to wait in line. You can go right through. And I looked over and there was three people in the line. I'm like, no, that's okay. We'll go over here. And he's like, okay, if you think so. And when we got up to the regular place to go through, there's a big sign that said regular visa, no additional money need to be paid here. So, you know, apparently that's a semi-legitimate, do it every day type of bribe situation for Cambodia.
Yeah, I think Jim and I actually kind of circumvented that. Yeah. They were pointing us to the line that was that. And then there was a couple other lines that didn't have any. We got in the other line and then we just kind of scooted under the ropes. We didn't know, but hey. So then, yeah, so we get out of there. You guys, I think you and Terry went and got your SIM cards and then got our guy from our hotel.
We had arranged for a pickup from the hotel. The hotel arranged to pick us up. We assumed it would be a van or a car or something.
Yeah, Jim, were you the one that sent the email to him, right, that said, hey, by the way.
Big Americans. Yeah.
Americans with luggage. Right? Can you send a van? And nope, they showed up with two tuk-tuks.
Two tuk-tuks. Well,
really?
One tuk-tuk.
One tuk-tuk.
Oh, no, the other one's coming.
Yeah. We at least got a van when we were there, Jim.
That's right.
I am special.
Yeah, so we did our tuk-tuk ride from the airport to the hotel, which, Eric, I guess you stayed at, too.
That's yes.
The
Ladakiri.
Ladakiri?
Ladakiri.
Is that how you say it, Jim?
Uh-huh.
Ladakiri Boutique Hotel, which is right in the, I guess, the old section of Siem Reap. Jim, you were talking about, which was interesting, and I know you rode with
along a dirt road.
Yeah, well, Terry and I rode in a tuk-tuk, and Jim rode in a tuk-tuk, and he was telling me about, like, your all's first trip was 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between how much Siem Reap has exploded from a tourist standpoint and the number of hotels. You know, there's like now big resorts on the outskirts, which I imagine that's kind of where families and, you know, if you're going to go, it's, you know, it's a big place, but you're not in the downtown area where we were. There's only a couple of little small boutique hotels that were in that area, but places just exploded. Like, I guess 7 years ago, there was only which is still big, like a million a year, and now it's like 4 million.
Maybe explain
that. Incredible.
Explain the difference you've seen over the time.
Well, you know, it's just that it's sort of spread out more. As you said, there's so many more hotels at all different price points and levels, like Pub Street, which is the big party street. I think when we first went there in 2012, it was basically about two blocks long, and every single place was just the same thing, thumping disco music, classes in Khmer cuisine if you wanted to take them, people milling about. Now Pub Street seems like it goes for about four blocks in a couple different directions, many more hotels, stores, 7-Elevens, you know, everything you could possibly need. Clearly the infrastructure has benefited from the increase in tourists.
Yeah,
is it still continuing to expand? A lot of construction still ongoing?
It seems to be, yeah.
Well, I mean, on our rides out to the temples, I mean, there was constant construction.
Yeah.
I mean, just constant construction.
What I found unique, or I didn't know what to expect. So I don't know what I thought was unique or not. But, and we talked about it a few times, it was sort of like the Wild West. Because you had a lot of restaurants. You had the massage parlors, the bars. I mean, there was a ton of stuff to be able to do. Mm-hmm. The night markets, the Pub Street, all this. But you would, other than the Pub Street area, most of there was no sidewalks. Some were dirt roads, some were semi-paved roads. It was just the infrastructure, and it sounded like it's come a long way, still was way behind.
Oh, yeah, it's a very third world-ish.
Well,
yeah.
Talk about the way that it's just sort of popping up. You guys, I think, Tony, you found that bar across the street from the one place we like to eat and drink, My Five Sons. That basically the guy talked the owner of the building into letting him set up in his, you know, front little niche there. Hey, what was it, $1 shot of liquor?
Yeah, this guy was crazy. He was from Australia, right?
Big Australia.
Australia. He
crazy Australian.
He came there 4 years ago, never left, and then he befriended the, yeah, so the restaurant across from Five Sons.
Up just a little bit from there.
Yeah, so Brick Oven Pizza, by the way, in Siem Reap.
Right.
It was pretty good. Crazy combinations. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
But yeah, right across the street. So imagine a street front little section that probably would hold like two or three tables. We convinced the owner to take that out and just put up almost like just a standing bar that you would buy to put in your house, right?
It's like Lucy's psychiatric stand, you know, psychiatric health. 5 cents only. This is shots of liquor for a
buck. And there's no mixers. There's nothing. It's whatever liquor he decides to
have. Yeah, like 10 bottles on
and
the
he puts it up on the shelf, and it's a dollar shot.
Nice.
And here's what he said. We went over and talked to him. He goes, all right, I try to get to work around 5 in the evening, but
I might not
make it.
I like his business.
And he goes, and I leave when
I'm ready to.
I'm either too drunk or I feel like I need to leave.
That's a hell of a job.
I was like, wow.
So it sounds like he's doing shots as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He did shots with us. It was Wild West. I mean, it was just kind of crazy. Going in, I mean, I remember.
In a fun way.
Yeah,
in a fun way.
Time.
It was.
And I got a cool little videos on the phones, and I'm still in the process of editing all that stuff. But, I mean, the potholes, and that we were teasing, like, when we get back home, if anybody complains about potholes, I'm like, shut up. You have no idea. You can lose an elephant in some of these.
And an elephant's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. And they're flying down the road, and all of a sudden they just veer off to the side because a van's coming through. Where did the van come from? I don't know. And then, boom, they're back out there, and they're just weaving around people.
And this was the case, I think, for all of Southeast Asia. Whether you're a pedestrian or you're riding in a tuk-tuk or driving a regular vehicle, nobody stops. You just kind of meander one way or the other, and everybody has enough awareness that they do the same thing. Nobody actually stops. You just sort of keep
going. That's how you get hit.
Yeah, you stop. That's when he calls a pileup.
And just keep going. But so the hotel, I mean, Jim, I guess you had found this one, right?
Several years ago.
A lot of curious.
Well, Terry and I both found this one from the trip a couple years ago, and we looked around for about a month as we were getting ready for this trip and just couldn't find anything as centrally located for the same price, which, gosh, what was it? It was like $35-40 a night for two people.
Oh, yeah. So
$20 each with breakfast included.
Right.
So let's be clear.
Would you classify that as a 3 or 4-star hotel?
Four star, right.
Nice pool. And nice amenities.
And we were talking about this before. I mean, all Southeast Asia is very
dollar friendly.
Well, I was going to say just friendly from a service perspective.
Yeah.
But the people in Cambodia, especially in Siem Reap, I mean, very, very, very much
accommodating
and very service oriented. And I mean, even to, we get off of our tuk-tuks and roll in. I mean, they're taking our luggage. They're sending them there. They set us down in a couch. They're serving us tea.
Little drinks.
While they're getting everything kind of ready and organizing everything. And then they take us to our rooms and set us all in. I mean, it was just
top notch.
Yeah. Right. Fabulous pool. The pool was spectacular.
I know, right? Great pool, isn't it?
Great pool.
Right. Yeah. And you guys have it perfectly set up. You go, you do the tours till noon, 1, 2 o'clock. You come back, it's too hot to do anything, and you just relax in the pool for 2-3 hours. It's really
so first you get a mojito down at 5 Suns.
I'm sorry, I forgot that.
Too. Then you go to the pool.
So we'll go back to, all right, so we roll in our tuk-tuks, we get all settled in, and then we went out and just kind of meandered.
Massages.
So we're only like a block away from one of the beginnings of the night market, which is kind of interesting. In that there, because of the heat, there's so many markets that are, they're not open during the day. They don't start until 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening.
Right.
And then, so we found a great little place right at the top of that one street, which is again like 2 blocks from the hotel. And again, we had been through 4 straight days of massages. So
fresh on our mind,
we're like, all right, we gotta find a massage.
Right, you gotta keep it going.
Yeah, so we found a place and it was $2.
Right.
I mean, it was just spectacular. You give them $3 and it was heaven on earth.
Yeah.
I think this was the first place that Terry didn't fall asleep, right?
Yes. Well, which one didn't he fall asleep at?
Some they remembered
it. They definitely recognized him the next day. But it was cool. They, again, kind of a similar all outdoor underneath of a roof, but still open air facing. And they had a TV screen. I have no idea what the hell was playing on that, but it was there. And,
we have to give a plug to my five.
One had a history of the temples, or somebody told
that was
about
out.
It.
That was out when we went to Bante Shrey.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Well, no, but during the massage. Yeah, that was while we were having lunch that day. But during the massage, they had it was, I think it was the same video because I remember seeing it. Yeah. So
that was also the place they had, which we didn't do, but Eric, you said you did on your trip. There's a ton of places there, which we didn't see in Bangkok, but was definitely in Siem Reap, was the fish.
The footman, the dead skin off of you. Right.
That was also $2.
Right.
Stick your foot in a big pile of water and let the fish eat all the dead skin off your feet.
But you guys didn't do that.
No, we didn't.
I did that. Eric, we did that when we were there. So how was it? I mean, it's stick your feet in water and all the little fish and thousands of them tickle your feet and eat all the dead skin off of your feet. I mean, it's hard to describe. I guess it feels just like that. I mean, it tickles some people, but me, it didn't bother.
It makes Terry laugh and giggle like a little girl.
Did you have that going on?
Yeah.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. What kind of fish are they?
They're just really little fish. I mean, really little. Some are.
So called
is that illegal?
I can't. I know. I'm sitting here giving a sigh. I just realized what I was doing.
The little fish.
I mean, they're microscopic. Some of them are so small. Not microscopic, but they're little incandescent. Go some fish. Of them are.
I don't even know what they are. They're just small fish. They're probably like 1 to 2 inches.
Yeah.
Some are goldfish. They could, I don't know.
It was pretty funny. I contemplated doing it, but
I did it, and I liked it.
And Jim, you said that also made Terry giggle?
Oh, yeah, just like a little girl. We've got a videotape somewhere of him from our first trip back in 2012, just sitting there. He could keep his feet in for maybe about 20 seconds before he yanked them out.
By the way, they're called Gera Rufa.
All right. All right.
Also referred to as Dr. Fish. And I did not look that up on Google.
Where did you look it up on?
My phone.
So that was our first night, right? Yep. So then we went to Pub Street, hung out, and then the beer's there. So Anchor, which we didn't have in Bangkok, right? So the Angkor beer.
Good beer.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we went down to Pub Street, found a, right on the street, place to sit down, chill out. I forget the name of that place. Jim, do you remember the name of the place?
No idea.
Yeah, it was like three or four restaurants in off the street.
What amazed me about Angkor Wat, that particular street, was, you have a dirt street, and it's really cool. It's almost like a beach town kind of vibe feel is what I thought when I was there, like an American beach town with, I enjoyed it.
Did you enjoy it? Yeah. Guess you lost your thought there, right?
Yeah, I lost my thought.
It was funny.
I went a little too far into the Jameson.
Well, I'll say what was funny though is when we started it in Bangkok, we were paying roughly 75 cents to a dollar a beer.
Right.
And as our trip progressed, it slowly goes down in price. So now we're doing Anchor beer and fifty cents, 75 cents. Depending on where you sat, but it's cool. It was good beer, and we hung out there, and then guess what? That was pretty much it for that first night. Right?
Then we went to the pizza place, and Jim and I we knew we had to get up early for Temples.
Yeah, so the whole plan was we were there for 3 days to visit the Temples. So the next day we were going to do a temple, start our day, figure we had, from 8 o'clock until about 1. We had organized Tuk Tuk to take us in.
Fix up around 7:30.
Yeah, so we head off Pub Street and we head back towards our hotel, and that's when we found that brick oven place, across from the place that Jim mentioned, right? So we eat our crazy pizzas. I don't even know what the hell we had. Jim, you had gator and something on yours?
Yeah, it was crocodile on mine. Yeah.
Crocodile on your pizza?
Yes.
Yeah. You had crocodile pizza?
Yeah.
Have you ever had crocodile pizza before?
Can't say that I have.
Right? No, that's crazy.
How was it, Jim?
It was kind of stringy, not very strong. It was just like chicken.
Chicken pizza.
The four of us, we ordered four different types of pizzas and just tried them all out. We're sitting there so again, at this point, it's like 11, 12 o'clock.
Midnight.
And so we're all thinking, and I don't want to get too much into this, but it's kind of fun. We're all thinking it's about time to roll up. But Terry's like, I want to go over and check out this shop place. We're watching this.
well, me and the other Jim decided that, we knew better needed to go and get our rest and all that. And then Terry said, well, I'm not ready to go home, and you're never ready to go home.
He's pointing at Tony.
So you all work from here.
Let's be clear. From here. It was not my idea.
And the blame game comes out.
From what I understand, after we left, you all decided you had $10 between you.
$10.
And at 50 cents a beer, Terry figured, let's go till the $10 is gone.
That's exactly what he said. So in Cambodia, at least I think it's definitely a Siem Reap. I don't know if it's throughout Cambodia. They use the U.S. dollar.
Yes.
I will say, as far as travel tips, thank you, Jim Reed, for this. Get yourself fresh, crisp $100 bills or
$1 bills.
There you go. And just take them.
And the crisp part is the part that I don't think I paid enough attention to or didn't realize. I mean, I had crisp $1 bills, but if they've got a little wrinkle or a little tear or they're old or worn, they won't take them.
Yeah, like some of the machines.
No, on the people.
Oh, really?
The banks won't take them.
For the listeners out there, what's amazing about Siem Reap is, I guess, Jim, because their money machines can't handle their money because of the paper. Right. Weird. It doesn't it clogs it up. So when you go and you can get American dollars out of their ATM in Siem Reap, Cambodia.
Yeah, by the way, when you get it, you ask for $100, it gives you a $100 bill.
Right.
$100 bill.
And the problem with that is nobody can cash
$100. Yeah, you can't
change. I literally took a packet of 100 $1 bills and probably came back with 35 of them still in the packet.
Well, that's because
that's how little you spend there for the moment.
If you were with Terry and I, we just spent your 35.
So getting back to this, you know, Tony and Terry deciding to stay out a little longer, and the thought process of saying, well, we've just got $10 left. Let's just drink 50-cent beers until the $10 is gone. Just so for any of our listeners out there that's not really great at math, that'll be 10 beers apiece.
Right.
Okay. So let's
That went sideways because Jim and Jim went home, and then Terry said, "Well, let's stop at the shot place."
That's a dollar.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
so eat up a little bit more of your
money. That's if you do one.
Yeah.
And again, this is all Terry. I'm going to throw him square in the butt.
Because he's not.
It was not my idea. So I was like, okay, I'll go with you, of course.
Right? You didn't turn him down.
No, I didn't. So we go over there, and then he picks a shot. So we strike up a conversation with, and there was another couple who was also from Australia. They met this guy a few days ago. They've been there for like 4 or 5 days. They extended their stay. They were only supposed to be here like 2 nights, and this is like their 4th night. So they just, you know, kind of fell in love with like the town and the vibe, and it was good. It's kind of funny. So we did a shot, and then that's $2. And then Terry says, let's do another one. And Terry doesn't do shots.
Right. Ever.
Ever. So now we're on a second shot.
It's because they're never a buck a piece.
Anywhere in the world.
Right.
I did shots of Jaeger for $1.
Wow.
Right.
How do you not do it?
It's $1.
Right. Jim and Jim found a way.
And then we talk for another 10 minutes. And then Terry goes, okay, let's do a third. Like, what? All right. So we do a third shot. Now we spent $10.
60% of our money.
Now we're down to $4.
He's just trying to get the money going. So, I know his tax.
And then it's funny. So then we were walking up, and then we stop at another place, and we have a beer. So there goes $1. Now we're down to $3. And then the thing that threw it off, we stopped to another place. Oh, I can't remember the name of that. It was like
Mickey's.
Thank you. Mickey's.
From Rocky. The trainer.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's what it was named after.
Oh, you
have a pool table. It was hilarious. We go in there, but it was 75 cents a beer.
Oh.
Now we got $1.
You really
got to
use your math.
And it's like, we're blown. How do we do this? We're down to $4. We just blew $1.50. Mass all off.
What a kerfuffle. That's
crazy. So my suggestion was, let's go home. Terry wanted nothing of it. No. We got to spend our money. We can only spend this so many ways now. Finally, it was, let's just go get more money.
Great idea.
I'm like, are you sure you don't want to just call this a tie as far as us hanging out? Because he was like, no, I'm going to hang out longer than you. I'm like, no, let's just go home. Nope. So we roll in. It's what?
Oh, around 2 o'clock is what I remember.
Yeah, we're rolling in. Oh, I need to get more money. So I had to
right back out the door.
And the cash. Because, you know, you don't think you spend that much. So we only rolled out. Like I said, we had $10. I reach in, get more of my $1 stacks.
Right.
Wow. Right.
It's just kind of funny. And then we head out. Next thing you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm still telling Terry, you think we should go home? We have to hit a tuk-tuk at like 8 o'clock.
Yeah, like 7:30.
Yeah. And he's like, no. It's like, okay, fine. And it is funny. We went through this back and forth. It was called a tie, and it turned into pretty late. And I brought Terry home, and we went in our separate beds. He didn't make it on the Temple Run the next morning.
Big surprise.
Yeah.
But did he even make it to breakfast?
To Tony's credit, they roll in around 5.
Oh.
And I'm waking his butt up at 6:45 because we need to hit breakfast at 7 to catch Tuck Tuck at whatever, 7:50. It after the initial couple, you know, Tony get up, he pops up, Got a shower and rolled.
How was that day?
And rolled all day.
I'm glad I took video. Can you remember? Because it was funny when I went back and watched the video. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. It was a little bit of a bar. It was a long evening.
Thank God for video.
Yeah.
Right?
But he did it with full, I give him this props. He did it with full energy.
Yes.
He wins it. He may not have been.
But he was
fully engaged and all that. Wasn't like dozing off in the tuk-tuks or anything like that.
It was great. I mean,
he was totally engaged.
So Jim and I, we organized our tuk-tuk. So it's funny. So when you get there, the temples are, it's a huge grounds. And most of the tuk-tuk drivers, if you look at a map, they have like the little map. So they'll share it with you at the airport. You can do the small loop, kind of a large loop. And then, like, an all-inclusive, what takes you out to the couple places that we end up going. And Jim said, hey, I want to do the small loop with you guys. I want to do Angkor Wat, and then we'll do a couple of the on that tight loop today, but I'm probably not going to do it tomorrow. So the three of us did that. And then, so we went to Angkor Wat and then to Bayonne, right? Is that how you say it? Bayonne?
Yes.
Yeah. So Angkor Wat, again, we talked about it earlier. It's just, I mean, what a facility.
Yeah, to walk up on it for the very first time.
Yeah.
It's so large. It's so special. Again, Versailles, in a different way, you think 600 acres of Versailles, you think of the same type of thing, but just a lot earlier in time. You know what I mean?
Well, it was just a phenomenal civilization.
Complex. Yeah.
That built that. And you know what I thought was really neat about all the temples is just how steep the steps are. Because back then, they were smaller in stature. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at the doorways that you go through, that you have to go through, they're like 5 foot.
Yeah, they were monkey people.
Well, size-wise, they were very short.
Hey, watch it.
Hey, I know you're vertically challenged. But the steps were very, very, very steep.
They were.
I mean, it was just really kind of amazing. But all the stone carvings, though, throughout that temple.
Incredible, right?
Yeah, the wall carving.
Yeah.
The stories they told, the wars they fought. Very, very intricate, very neat.
But I have to say, all right, so Jim, you ready for this? We got to lead in with the monkeys.
The monkeys, oh God. You ready for the monkey store?
We're right around the corner of the monkey store. But one of the amazing things about Angkor Wat is, so people who imagine castles, you always have the moat. Well, imagine lake-size moats.
Yes.
Four miles.
Yeah. 4 miles. We're talking huge.
Around the entire facility.
4 miles by 4 miles.
Right, so to protect it.
So once you get,
it's incredible.
Once you roll up on the place, and then you have to walk in, but then it was kind of funny. So there's monkeys, and the family of monkeys are playing. I think the three of us sat there and filmed it and took a picture of 15, 20 minutes, and
they were
some of the
blast.
Funniest pictures, playing with a trash can and ripping out trash
bag
and having a blast. It was hilarious.
Stealing bags from people.
Yeah. So instead of doing our normal food story, we're going to do a little special monkey story.
Oh, all right. No food story, monkey story.
The only person I know who's ever had a monkey is Jim Reed.
Oh.
Yep. So, Jim. Please tell us the story about owning your monkey.
I can't believe I'd never told Tony or Jim the story before. And after we went to Angkor Wat, having just seen the monkeys, we went across the way, got 3 beers and a coconut, and started talking about monkeys. And I said, I once had a monkey. And, they're horrible things to own. And they said, Tony kind of looked at me and said, I want to hear more about this monkey. And so I told him the story. It was back, I must have been about 12, 13 years old. My father came home with a monkey one day. He was working in Baltimore. We were about 70 miles away. He came back with a monkey strapped to the back of his motorcycle and brought it in and said, well, children, we now own a monkey. Her name was Chucky. She was a little rhesus monkey. She'd been the pet of one of the guys that my stepfather worked with. And the guy had retired to go out to sea. He wanted to live on a boat on the Chesapeake. And so for whatever reason, he decided he couldn't take the monkey with him anymore. So we got the monkey, which was just fine. The only problem was the guy who had owned Chucky was an alcoholic. And, we were Southern Baptists at the time. So the monkey had been used to taking a shot of whiskey every night with its owner and was pretty addicted to the sauce by that point in its life. being good Southern Baptists, my stepfather and mother decided that it was time to put Chucky on the wagon. So we cut him off right there, you know, no, you know, half step or, you know, anything like that. No
cold turkey.
It was cold turkey and not the, you know, the kind of turkey he really wanted. So put him on the wagon, dried him out, and every moment after that, he hated us. Mm-hmm. I think he just looked at us as, you know, some nasty Southern Baptist who only wanted to make him suffer. The only person that Chucky respected was my stepfather. The rest of us, you know, he'd come over, he'd grab us by the hair and then make us sit there for an hour while he went looking through our hair for bugs. Never found any, I'll tell you, but, you know, you couldn't move. And if you moved, he'd bite you. I've still got scars on my knees from that damn monkey. He'd steal your car keys and stick it in the back of the pouch in his mouth. And you know, there's nothing you could do. You had to wait until he decided he wanted to spit it back out. And yes, they do fling poo. Well, one day after my stepfather left for work, Chucky sort of lost it for whatever reason. He went on a tear, just started bouncing all around the downstairs and, you know, just attacking my little sister, just going nuts. So the only thing I could do is I grabbed him by the scruff of his, I'm sorry, grabbed her by the scruff of her neck and threw her into the downstairs bathroom and locked the door. Just her bouncing around in there periodically during the day, and then it was quiet. By the time my stepfather got home and opened up the door, Chucky had opened up the medicine closet, pried off the lids on all the medicines, you know, taken God knows what, eaten all the lipsticks, smeared it over her face. Basically looked like a little John Belushi laying on her back on the bathroom floor, passed out. We were really poor back then. This was, you know, West Virginia, 1970s. And
God,
if it happened today, we would have taken her right to the vet. But back then,
it didn't exist, did it?
Yeah, it did. That idea wasn't implanted anywhere in our heads. It was, let's shove her back in her cage, put her down in the root cellar. Let's see what happens. It's kind of touch and go, but after about 2 weeks, she rallied and got up and, you know, came back to life, but she always sort of looked like a veteran with that thousand-yard stare in her eyes. Just, you knew something was off. She'd seen things, man, and she didn't want to talk about them.
That monkey had been through stuff.
That monkey had been through hell. After, you know, another year, we figured, well, maybe she needs a new start with somebody else. So we took her over to the Boonesboro Livestock Auction, where she was sold in between the goats and I think it was the chickens that night. My last memory was of her trying to attack the auctioneer who was standing there with a cane, you know, trying to say, oh, look at this cute little monkey. I got to pet her, and nearly getting his finger bit off. So, Chuck, wherever you are, I'm sorry. You deserved much better. If it were today, I would pour the shots myself for you, even if they cost a dollar in Cambodia.
Yeah. So get the we just finished touring Angkor Wat, and you know, hour or two into the morning, and you come back across, and now at this point, there's all these places that have built up. They're selling little trinkets, and you can buy food, and you can buy two beers and a coconut.
Yeah.
So, which is what we did.
Well, three beers
and a coconut. Oh, sorry. And then Jim breaks into the story about him. Like, I'm just losing it. Laughing, belly laughing. And I was like, I have never heard such a story. I was like, oh, this has got to come up. It's like the best story ever.
Yeah. Best monkey story ever.
Oh, my God. That is awesome. So, anyway, so we'll go past that. So, we leave and get back in our tuk-tuk, and then we head to one of the other closed temples, which is Bayon.
Mm-hmm.
That's the monkey temple?
That is, right? Right, Jim?
Is that the monkey temple?
No.
That's the one with all the faces.
That's Bante Shrek, right?
Oh, Bante Shrek. I think you're right.
So Bayon is just past.
It's got all the faces.
Yeah, that has all the faces in the wall.
Oh, right.
And a gorgeous bridge leading into it with all the faces and that of the people that are lined up along the sides.
Yeah, one were like demons, and the other side was. I forget the exact
story. I don't remember the story. Jim, do you
remember the story? Anyway, they're pulling on like a large snake.
Oh. Yeah, Jim, do you remember the story on that, on the bridge going into Bayon?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the snake, the churning of a sea of milk. One of their creation stories where God is trying to create good and evil, or more good to counteract the evil. And so they're doing this tug of war on a snake at the bottom of the ocean and churning the sea of milk, as they said, to create a balance in the universe. It's a pattern you see a lot. You see the snake in front of the old entryway to Angkor Wat as well. So that's a motif that repeats itself a lot in the Khmer art.
Yeah. Something I want to jump back and I totally forgot. So, Jim, we were separated when Jim Scott and I were doing our tour of Angkor Wat. And, again, it's such a large facility. And we're walking through, in one of the sections, there was monks, two monks. They're doing prayers and blessings. And I was just going to donate money and walked up to throw it in. And they were like, no. Took off our shoes, kneeled down, and got blessings.
Yep.
It was cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
And I think we're both still wearing the bracelets. Yep. They hand-make bracelets there. When you get the blessing, they tie one on to your wrist. And
Saint is very cool. They take these little, like, elephant tail type things. You see Eddie Murphy when coming to America that he was waiting
for. Right.
And I guess put it in their holy water, and they douse you with it, which was like 90 degrees, it felt great.
Oh, yes. It was truly a blessing. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. I was like, how many people do you know who've been blessed by in the middle of Angkor Wat.
And Tony, you clearly needed that karma, because you're going to tell everybody what happened next when we got
to the next temple.
Which one?
When we got to Bayon, if you remember from a few podcasts back when we talked about Cambodia, I mentioned how John Ribble did the sin of leaving his pass in the tuk-tuk.
Oh, yeah.
When we got there, and so he couldn't get into Bayon. He had to try to run back and find the tuk-tuk owner so that he could find that pass, you know, because they really do check when you walk into things. And Tony, what happened to your pass?
Oh, my God. Again, one of these crazy stories that you just never would believe would happen. So when you get your pass, they snap a picture of you.
Yes.
Right?
I almost brought that for the tchotchke.
It's your printed pass. Because it's a multi-temple pass. You get to go through it, and we bought it. And so all of a sudden we show up at to this temple, and I'm digging through my pockets. I'm like, son of a bitch, it's gone. I bet it came out when we were having three beers and coconut.
Three beers and coconut and vendors selling the scarves.
Yes. A whole lot of negotiating, a whole lot of money coming in and out. And so then we get over here to Bayon, and now I don't have a pass. Like, shit. Like, I just pulled a Ribble. Damn. Right. So now I can't do this. The guys are already in. So I kind of like sneak around where they're checking it, and I make it through. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do now.
Because Jim and I didn't know he didn't have
it. I didn't know. You were already in. So I got through. I'm like, but I guess I'm going to have to buy another pass to get over for this. And so we go through the whole thing, and then we get back out, and we're talking to our tuk-tuk guy. And, you know, at this point, it's about 1 o'clock, and you know, it's hot, and we're like, no, I think we're done for the day. Let's just go ahead and head back. And I tell him that I lost my pass. Lo and behold, this dude is grabbing the people that work there. They're making phone calls, blah, 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 blah. They call back. We said, I think it happened over at Angkor Wat, and I think this is about where we were. He goes, I think we got it.
You're kidding.
I was like, no way. I'm thinking we're going to roll back in there. I'm paying like a little finder's fee, and they're going to give me another pass or something. Mm-hmm. Roll in. He drives us all the way back to Angkor Wat, jump out, walks me up, go up. Two of the security guards, they point out it is actually my pass.
Oh, my God.
My picture on it.
Oh, my shit.
I was like, what?
Yeah, that's great.
I was like, Cambodia loves me. I mean, I just got my duty-free liquor. You know, I walk back through, and now I find my pass. I mean, in the middle of, there's how many thousands of people go through there a day?
No way this is going to be a bad trip.
How does that happen?
Right, yeah.
I mean, really, how does that happen?
Keep in mind, he's going on 1 hour sleep.
Yeah. it was totally amazing. Right?
And those passes are what, like $20 a day, $25 a day for three days?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought I was going to buy another one, but I was like,
since we're talking about that, maybe kind of let people know how you go about getting those and what you should do and who you should contact. And, you know, people are like, well, you're talking about these passes. How did you get them?
The tuk-tuk driver will take you there the very first day. They already know the whole scheme. They go in. There are multiple windows. You know, you're in and out in about 15 minutes. You just pay as your money, get your picture, and they give you a pass.
Day or longer pass.
Yeah. And I would say, Jim, you guys gave us good advice. And the good thing about this, so when you go, I mean, when you do the temples, you're definitely going to do it via tuk-tuk. And it's a motorized scooter, you know, attached. But you get your guy, and if you say, hey, I'm going to do this 2-3 days, whatever it may be, that's your guy.
Right.
You know, keep him. You find your guy, you hook him up, and
keep him.
It's spectacular. And what's kind of bizarre is, you know, you pay that fee kind of through the hotel for it, but it's really kind of an honor system because, to be honest, you know, we rolled in the first day. He has no idea. We say we're going to do the small loop. Okay, that's $15 for the day for all three of us, by the way.
Yeah.
My dumbass thought that was per person. So by the second day, when Jim Scott and I, you know, Jim has been done this a couple times, so we were like, we want to go see all these other places, and the guy was like, hey, that's on the outer loop, that's $25. Like, oh, okay. So I'm thinking, okay, between the two of us, okay, I got $40 into this, this is fine. I didn't realize it was $40 for the whole thing.
The whole thing, bro.
I know, right? Your money goes a long way in Canada.
I felt the guy was so awesome, and he finds my pass and all this kind of stuff, and the things he did for us on a second day, which we're ready to talk about. He took care of us and did all the stuff, took us, got us food, gave us water. $20 tip felt absolutely appropriate.
Right.
$20 tip.
Right.
$50.
$40 for the 2 days.
Uh-huh.
He just got a $20 tip.
Uh-huh.
He was ecstatic.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
But it was well worth
it. Oh my God, yeah.
Great.
It was.
But so again, that was our first day. And then Jim, tell us about the restaurant that you booked. That was Mango Cuisine.
Yeah.
One of the things that really is surprising about Siem Reap is of all the things you can do, there's so much cheap food to eat, but there are also these amazing high-end restaurants. And I think we found about three of them so far that we really love. We went to two of them this time. The first one was called Mango Cuisine, sort of a nouvelle French cuisine place. The second one was Wat Damnak, which is out by one of the churches and graveyards, just on the other side of the little river there. And so we had reservations for both of those places, and you have to have reservations because they are very small, you know, just maybe about a dozen, 15 tables to seat during at any one time.
Right. So they might 75 people throughout the night, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Big.
And so we got the reservations well in advance. It was easy to do over, the internet through email. I think the average meal that we got at these two places for like a 6 or 7 course tasting menu was, about $30, and throw in an extra 15 for either the pairing with the wine or for an extra bottle of wine that we shared. And you know, for under 50, you got a meal that would have been well over 100 in any place in the States.
Absolutely. Don't you, right? I feel the same way.
It was amazing. I mean,
that's one of the meals that stick out in my mind over all the travels that I've done, is that meal. At I was with you, Jim, at the
Wat Damnak.
Wat Damnak, yes. And I'm to this day, I'm impressed with that meal.
Yeah. So Mango Cuisine is the first one, that first night we went to, that was the one where we had a true wine pairing.
Oh, okay.
So the meal, I think was like 20-some bucks, and then the pairing was also 20-some bucks. But when we say wine pairing, it was equivalent to about a bottle and a half a person. They gave you a full glass of wine with 7 courses.
Isn't that great?
I was like, what?
It spoils you, doesn't it?
Yeah, right. Really crazy.
And in both places, the presentation of each meal was so carefully done.
Top-notch.
Yeah, I'm going to share one of the pictures, and we all had there was a little bit of choices in it, and I know several of us got equivalent of the steak, the filet, and it was a smoked filet. And, you know, so if you have like a smoky cocktail, which we see a lot in the, you know, the concoctions we get, and they had this whole smoke underneath of a dish over top of the steak. And so when they served it, they brought it out and then they pulled that top off. And of course the smoke goes crazy. And then you're left with this gorgeous filet.
Nice.
It was, presentation was,
yeah,
just hands down.
Spot on. Spot on. Along with the
filet. You look and you go, that was $27. I would pay $27 just for the steak.
I know, right? Yeah.
So that was pretty awesome.
And in both places, you know, the chef came out and talked to us, and
yeah,
it was just fantastic experiences. I mean, we came away from Wat Damnak, of all things, buying packets of salt. Where the hell do you ever do that?
We'll talk about, we got to talk, we can hit on that, and then we can hit back to
do that now.
Yeah, let's hit on that. So that second restaurant, so what is the name of that again, Jim?
Wat Damnak.
Wat Damnak?
Mm-hmm. Wat Damnak.
Yeah. So they had two different pairings, and two of us got each.
Right.
And, I mean, they were, I mean, just absolutely spectacular.
Deep tongue.
Yeah, it was crazy good food.
We'll
yeah.
save that for, intricate,
One of the most, like Jim was saying about the salt. So when the meal is completely done, the chef literally brings out a tray, a wooden tray that has a multitude of fruit, and this whole lime. I mean, if you look at the '80s, it looks like a cocaine
lime.
From one end of the board to the next, that is the salt, lime, and pepper
mm-hmm.
concoction. Okay, and this is what we heard about. We're like, okay, you gotta try this. I don't care what you put in that;
it's good.
It's spectacular,
right?
And it was like one of those things. We're like, how do I get more?
Uh-huh.
We asked it. And we were like, hey, do you guys sell that? Lo and behold, they did. So we all rolled back with a packet of this stuff.
Salt.
I haven't broken into it yet, but oh my god, it was so good.
So what did you dip into it?
It's fruit.
Fruit.
Banana, melons, dragon fruit, all kinds of different fruits they have. Yeah, that's one of the things about Southeast Asia.
The fruits are phenomenal.
Just
spectacular. Right.
So fresh and so
good and sweet.
Sweet.
And that, full
that
and
salt,
huge.
Pepper, lime concoction was just great. Yeah, and then we're getting a little tight on time, aren't we?
I don't know.
Who knew?
Yeah. Or
we have to go a little extra.
5 minutes was...
But let's talk about the second day of temple hopping.
Yeah.
So I know Jim and Terry had done this multiple times. Eric, you've been there too. So Jim Scott and I did kind of the outer loop, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah.
Our first place that we hit that morning was Thai Prom.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which, for anybody who is fans of Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, at least the Angelina Jolie version of it, that's where this was filmed. And I will say this, I loved Angkor Wat,
mm-hmm.
but that place was...
Oh, you really liked that place?
I love that
place. Oh, really?
Well, so when the reason the temples look the way they do is, I guess, the French in the, what, 1900s?
Mid-1800s. The botanists, the French botanists discovered them, and then they started... You know, revitalize.
Yeah, so they cleared everything.
Right.
Well, the one temple that they didn't clear the trees and the vegetation from was Thai Prom. So that's where you see those wild pictures of the roots climbing
through everything.
The temple.
Oh, didn't they film a movie there?
That was what it was.
That's Lara Croft. Tomb Raider.
It was just awesome.
It was.
And what was really amazing. So we roll in at Tucson. We were there first thing in the morning. I mean, we did get an early start. It was kind of neat. So when you get to the water, which is the moat around, you know, Angkor Wat.
The entire, right.
Everybody's going left to go to Angkor Wat. And we go right and we're by ourselves. There's nobody. We show up to the temple. There's hardly anybody there.
Yeah,
I got pictures inside the temple, but not a person in it, which is just a
hard to do, right?
Yeah. And then, I mean, the pictures in there were just amazing.
They were.
Absolutely amazing.
They were.
And they're spending a lot of money. So the first section of the temple now is under construction. They revitalized last year that whole, the last side that we saw, that was completely redone, which wasn't done 2 years ago.
Mm.
Right.
Amazing.
And one thing, the French initially, I mean, now, like Tony said, they're revitalizing them, fixing them up and all. But they wanted to leave one temple to show how the jungle had taken over these temples and what they had to deal with to put them together. So that's why they left it like this. but now they are recaptured. But it's amazing, especially in this temple, but even all of them. I mean, Tony mentioned the steep steps before. If this was a monument or national park here in the United States, you wouldn't see hardly any of it because there's no way you can go near these steps or go on these steps. They're odd-shaped and steep. There's no handrails, rarely. There's a bunch of rock or stones that have fallen down right there that you're walking over or by. I mean, it's crazy, but it's cool because you get to see stuff. And you never felt in danger or anything like that.
And you didn't have to sign a waiver.
No. You didn't have to sign a waiver. You just had to walk through it.
Yeah, if you fall and break your ankle, you're just going to disappear anyway.
Well, if you break your hip, you're going to die in 6 months.
That's an inside joke for everybody.
I always say when people ask me about Cambodia. Cambodia to me, I always say I was very pleasantly surprised. I didn't know what to expect. I really didn't know. I had never been there. I never really thought about even ever visiting it. I didn't know what Angkor Wat was. I didn't know what any of that was. So people were like, wow, Cambodia, what was it like? I'm like, it was a pleasant surprise. I really enjoyed it.
I second that.
The people
that
are awesome, and it was very inexpensive.
I second that thought because I had the least expectations, and maybe that's why.
Yeah.
And it was probably my favorite stop.
Right. I feel the same way coming away from it, too. And you hate to say it because I love Vietnam and I love Bangkok, but Cambodia was just such a pleasant surprise because I didn't really know what to expect.
It was interesting. I mean, I love that temple. And then, so we left there. It was really cool. And we decided we're going to the outer limits because Jim and Terry both said one of the unique things to visit is the landmine museum.
Yeah.
So anybody from an American standpoint, the Vietnam War and other wars, there's tons and tons of landmines and
unexploded
munitions
ordnance, yeah,
that are all over.
Yeah, all over the region.
Yeah, and I don't know the guy. I can't remember his name. And I didn't write that down.
You know his name? That you talk about the school and the.
Yeah.
You know that, Jim?
Yeah. What's his name? It's something like Ray. Gosh, it'll come to me here in a second.
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but he started a museum, and one of the big things that he was doing is taking out these munitions.
Yeah.
You know, and the museum is all about all the landmines and all the munitions that he has pulled out.
Aki Ra. His name is Aki Ra.
Which was a big fundraising undertaking for Lady Di. Remember, right? She used to do this. Once she passed, it really went kind of to its wayside. There was no popular person putting interest on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No.
The other unique thing I would say, just to tie back into Thai Prom, that which is where you know we saw this, is one of the things that there's a lot of kids and a lot of people who live in the area who have missing limbs or things from these munitions that have exploded. They're out, a farmer out cropping new grounds or kids playing, right? And it goes off. You just don't know when it's going to go off. The guy who does the museum started the whole thing with the music. Mm-hmm. And these guys do Khmer, sure the enunciation of the music. So right. Cambodian music. So we're coming out of the temple and there are a bunch of the kids who graduated from that program are all playing the music.
Right.
There. It's just kind of amazing to see, you know, just learn to adapt and it's pretty amazing.
And still,
it's a great learning experience. It really is.
It's very humbling.
It is very humbling. I agree. That's a good. Yeah. That's a good. Yeah, way to put it.
There's about 85 to 100 people a year still get hurt or killed. Maybe killed. I think it's statistic. And there's even more that get hurt
from unexploded.
From the explosion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah. There was a lot of ordnance dropped in that part of the world at that time.
In terms of tons, more bombs were dropped on Cambodia than any other country in the history of the world.
There you have it.
The Ho Chi Minh Trail was a big part of it.
Yeah.
But so again, from Thai Prom out to there, that's a good 30-minute
tuk-tuk. Probably a 45-minute ride.
Yeah.
And a tuk-tuk's going 20, 25 miles an hour.
Yeah. And so, Jim, I have a question for you, Jim.
Yeah.
So when we got there, we got a van. How'd you go from a van to a tuk-tuk? You didn't know what you were going to get, or you just
The right. night before when we arranged it, we asked the front desk to give us a car.
Okay.
Because it was only going to be four of us. And we figured a car was good enough. And then we knew the next day it would only be two of them. So we said, just get a car. And it was one of those things that sort of got lost in translation, as often happens in that part of the world.
Right, because the very first time you went, you and Terry took a tuk-tuk, and we know about, well, we can talk about it breaking down. Maybe we'll have to go do another about that. But the next time was, one of the next times was with me, and we got to do a van, and it was a lot easier to get around in the air conditioning. But you all went back this time and had to get around via tuk-tuk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was.
And it was a long ride.
It was long, slow, but it was really kind of cool for, so for Jim and I had been there and it was, you got to really see the countryside, so to speak.
In 3D.
Yeah. We were talking about this earlier, so it's funny. My instinct was, I thought it was like local hooch. So you go by all these little stands. And they're like,
Molotov cocktails.
Yeah, liter bottles of, you know, of, I thought it was hooch. Yeah.
It was gasoline.
Well, the tuk-tuk guys, they just stop and they buy it and they take a liter bottle and pour the gasoline in it. And it was dry. Yeah. Like,
they sell Molotov cocktail all over the country. Sorry, the first time I saw that, I'm like, wow, that's incredible. It's just a bottle of gasoline.
It is.
That's what it is.
Wow.
Yeah, and they sell them on racks like you'd see maps. You know, if you walk into a place along the turnpike somewhere in Pennsylvania, and there's a rack of maps, that's exactly what you see in Cambodia, a rack of Molotov cocktails. It's crazy.
So when we were going out, heading towards the museum, we go through this little town, and they're pouring fresh concrete. You can tell this was an old dirt road before, and now all of a sudden, it's like a metropolis.
Yeah.
It's got pouring concrete, and one of the things that you'll see throughout Southeast Asia, too, is kind of this, the woven stick kind of dustpan and broom, how they sweep things up.
Right.
And you're like, well, they're everywhere. There's got to be a warehouse, right, at some place? Well, we saw the warehouse. There's like 60 of these like baskets and brooms and the handles. And I'm like, well, that's where they buy them.
There you go. Yeah.
And then we leave there and we head to Bantay Shrey.
Bantay Shrey, yes.
And I think that's the oldest one, right, Jim? That's the 10th century one?
10th century. That is the mother. It's a temple to women, actually.
Yeah.
Is that the monkey one?
Jim, do you remember? That's 10th century, right? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Is that, most of this is red sandstone, but this is a harder form of the red sandstone, and doesn't weather as much. That's why it kept its color and most of its features, at least a lot stronger.
And there was a lot of wood carvings in this one, too, whereas the others are almost all stone. There was a lot of wood in this.
And in the entranceways, not the other ones were real tall, maybe 6 foot, and the other ones were near. Now today's doorways are 7 or 8 feet. These are like 5 feet, maybe. Yes.
At best.
Very short.
At best, yeah.
Jim, I have a question for you. What made you go to Siem Reap for the very first time in the first place?
You know, I think I had seen some documentary or some National Geo show on Angkor Wat, and it was just, we had originally chosen, I think, Bangkok. We knew we wanted to go there to Thailand, and I was like, what's near here? And looked over, and there's Angkor Wat. We said, okay, what's the third place? Vietnam. And it just sort of happenstance.
You got that out developed.
Yeah.
That's cool, because it's a very – I would recommend it to anyone. I really would. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't go. You know what I mean? It's just – it's really
I would say this. I mean, and we mentioned this before. I think Joe and I were talking about this on the way back. I mean, it's one of those places that I never thought about going.
Right.
But having been there, I think if you get a chance, you should absolutely go to the temple.
Absolutely.
I mean, just to kind of see the architecture and realize this is 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And people were living pretty damn high on the hog, so to speak.
Right,
and
yeah.
When you look at how they were doing things. And
at least they were.
Yeah, it was just amazing.
Right.
And just the architecture alone is just stunning.
I don't know about the people. I don't know how high in the hog the people that were building all this were living.
Well, that I don't know.
Somebody had to build it, and this was a lot of labor.
But then, Jim Reed, I don't know if you hit this temple, but when Jim and I were coming back from Bantay Shrey, you know, we weren't quite done. It wasn't a terribly hot day. So we asked our driver, like, hey, anything you recommend kind of on the back? And it was pre-rock.
It was right along the road, which
was right along the road. It's not too far from Angkor Wat. It's called pre-rock.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's one of the temples that you can still climb all the way to the top.
Oh, okay.
And but here's what I would say. This is when you realize the sun and the temperature on the ground versus the temperature at the top. Oh my God.
Really?
By the time we climbed the steep ass steps to the top, really hot.
Wow.
What's like an oven?
All right.
It's a stone oven.
You know, I think we did stop there and we just made Lee Lucas climb to the top and take pictures for us.
That sounds about right. But I would tell you some of the fantastic pictures that we got from the top of that.
Yeah,
it is absolutely gorgeous.
It was great. And what was getting back to the safety stuff that you wouldn't have here in the States, one, it was a very steep climb. But going back, thinking having to come back down those steep steps, it was, for me, a little daunting, especially if you got a little height issues or whatever. Mm-hmm. Luckily, on one side, and if you didn't walk around, you wouldn't know it, they did have one set of steps that they had built over top the steps that came with it, so you could go down with the rail. But the other ones like that, that doesn't look so intimidating in a picture.
So you look vertical.
So we're looking at a photo right now. You're talking about the top of those steps was really hot?
Oh my God.
Oh, completely compared to where you were at the bottom. No way. Wow.
And you can almost feel the heat emanate. Because this is like, at this point, it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. Yeah.
And that picture doesn't do justice how steep those steps are.
I don't think I got to that one.
When you climbed up, you had to, but you usually, where you see a little ledge, you stop off to the side to catch your breath. I mean, we took pictures and acted like we weren't out of breath. But that's what you're doing before you went up, and you had to sort of hold on to climb up, and they were very steep.
Jim, what's the name of this, Tony or Jim?
This one is pre-rock.
Did we go there when I was there 2 years ago?
No, you didn't.
Okay, so I'm looking at a picture here that no one else can see, but I don't recognize it. I'm like, I don't remember this one. So, okay.
It was
all the more reason to go back.
Yeah, I mean, I would highly recommend this.
With you, Brian.
Yes, sir.
He did say that this is one of the few that you can climb that's like Angkor Wat to climb up that step. That line was,
it was
forever.
Right. And those were regular wood steps. These were the actual steps.
Yeah, these are old steps. That's pretty awesome. And I want real quick back to Thai Prom, the Lower Crop Ching Rai one. We were going through and there's so many places you go. I found another monk. Mm. I got another blessing.
Blessings on this
trip? I
got
2 blessings.
What the heck? You need to about 1,000 more.
I was gonna say, if I can find a monk at every temple, I'm like, okay. But that was pretty awesome.
Can I talk a little bit about what I did, what Terry and I did on the second day while you guys were going through the temples?
Absolutely. So while Jim and I were temple hopping, what did you guys do?
We had I'd always wanted to go to the National Museum there in Siem Reap, and never been able to because we always just have enough days to go to the temples. So we finally made it out there. And I'd like to really highly make the pitch for if you're going out to Siem Reap for the first time and you've got at least 4 full days in country, start at the National Museum on the very first day. They've got some other things like a court of 1,000 Buddhas, which is kind of neat. But what they really do nicely is they give you the history of the Khmer people. And it takes you through the very first temples and shows you how it changed. And it talks about, you know, what's going on in terms of militarily and, you know, how they end up getting their power together. It's a very nicely put together narrative of the sort of short glory period of the Khmer people. So, you know, it doesn't take more than an hour and a half, but it's a good introduction to the temples. And just like you said, Jim, I think reading that book would have helped before you go out to the temples. Seeing the displays there also would be a really nice thing to do. Although I know everybody's just really dying to get right out onto the temples themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's easy to get to from the center of town. It's, you know, a dollar grab ride, basically. And doesn't take more than 90 minutes to go through.
Cool. Yep. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up our regular episode. Yep. We're going to jump into some bonus coverage. So remember, to get bonus coverage, go to the website.
It's subscribe.
And subscribe. That's at friendsthatcarryon.com. Make sure you subscribe there. You'll get access to our bonus coverage because we're going to hit on a few things that everybody wants to talk about, which is some of the craziness that happens on good old Pub Street. It's great. And then a couple other interesting just planning aspects that we want to talk about. So make sure you log in and sign up for that, and you get access to that. And
details.
And you can check us out on Facebook, too, and Instagram, Pinterest. All of it is at Friends That Carry On. So make sure you do that. So, again, until next week when we catch up on Hanoi.
Hanoi, Vietnam.
Again, stay tuned, and we'll be in touch soon.
Great.
All right, awesome.
Arriba de. Cheers.
Adios.
Adios.
Be sure to join the friends next week with another great podcast. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. You can also find the friends and other content on www.friendsthatcarryon.com or check us out on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook by searching Friends That Carry On. Thanks again for joining us. And don't forget to carry on, friends.